give us up.
I'm going to give you guys a little teaser. I'm working on a really, Brother Augustine and all the brothers that we were talking to, well, basically speaking, here's what I've been working on. Just to give you an update on what's going on over here with the works. Now that I finished, the Roman Martyrology is going to go up like in a week or so, but I wanted to do a whole book on retractions, like Augustine did. You see, retractions are all my old errors and heresies that I no longer hold, and that the true positions, and Augustine did this in his whole book of retractions. And that's good, because I still want to keep up my older works, although I think I got rid of most of the heretical stuff, but just in case, people can pull out stuff they printed out and say, hey, you know. So look at his retractions, and I'm telling you, this is what I held, this, like the Holy Eucharist stuff, that Jesus' soul was in the Holy Eucharist. So I was working on the retractions. Then we were talking, I was talking about, I don't know how it came up, but it was about grace, free will, and predestination, which is a really big thing. And it's about, I don't want to get into details on it now, but it has to do with Calvinism versus Pelagianism. And that's really big. That's one of my most favorite big projects I haven't completed yet. And I've been working on it for 20 years. I got all kinds of notes. I got great books on it. To read on it, and it's a very important thing. So I said, okay, let me do the, I was going to do the grace, free will, and predestination first, but I said, this is going to be a big project, so let me do the retractions first. Because retractions, it's not going to be that long. So then I started to work on the retractions. Then something came up a couple of days ago, I'm working on a new project. Yeah, this isn't that time. Remember I tell you, he said to St. Peter, you're going to go where you don't want to go? I'm not going where I don't want to go. I want to go there. I like all the stuff I'm doing. But it's like a ping pong ball. You're like, then I go, good. Retractions first, grace, free will, and predestination. I'm settled in. But I'm always used to this. Yeah. So God waited till I got the retractions thing lined up in such a way that I got the whole thing lined up. So I know how I'm going to do it. I got the I'm ready to go. And then some guy asked me a question from Poland. All right, should I tell you guys a little bit about it?
Yeah.
You guys are going to go crazy.
Are you recording?
He's recording. He was recording. Sal's over there on the computer. Anyway. Forget about it. And I love it, too, this work I'm working on. I love all the work I'm doing, basically. But so, that guy Miroslav Solowiecki, whatever his name is. Miroslav Solowiecki, whatever his name is. So he sends me a thing, and he sent me something before, and Augustine, we both answered him. It was about images, iconoclasm, and we proved him images, and he was respectful. And after we showed it, he goes, I see it, and okay, because he's trying to say the popes are condemning images. So I wrote a whole thing, it's posted, I posted it too, so it's a benefit for people like him, and he said thank you and all that. I forgot that we already dealt with him, but he said he wanted to be a Facebook friend, so I put him on as a friend. And then he sent me one of those little messages, and he says, what do you think about this? And it was an article titled, How Many Popes Does It Take to Deny the Immaculate Conception? Now, this happened on, by the way, Ascension Day. So this is perfect timing, too, because now I'm writing about this during the most perfect novena that we've ever done. This novena to God, the Holy Spirit, and I love this. Then I read the article, my hair went up, and I went, oh, I'm going to get you bastards, man. But basically, he's showing some popes he thought denied the Immaculate Conception, and some who maybe did or didn't, and I wanted to make sure the quotes were correct, what was he teaching, and so when I got that, I knew I needed to do more work on that too, because to give you an example, I got my book, The Miracle of Immaculate Conception, which is it's really beautiful that God gave me the ability and to understand how that happened in the womb of a good Saint Anne. That was very beautiful. And Mary's God's Masterpiece, I touch upon it a little bit. But what I never did, and I was ready to do this, I just didn't have time to do it, and it's another big project, and I had all the church fathers and other theologians and folks that taught the Immaculate Conception and those that didn't. Because basically it's an allowable opinion. You can hold both sides. So I had all that ready to go, and I never presented it. But to make a long story short, and so when I got this, I realized, because I was going to send them just to my Miracle of the Immaculate Conception book, which doesn't really go into detail. It just presents some things about people, that saints and theologians that believed in it, and the fact that Mary could never have had any stain of sin. But I never gave an in-depth study about what did the popes teach, true popes, anti-popes even. And by the way, when I say this goes about 20 or maybe more years even, it's really interesting because I did a whole thing on the Immaculate Conception regarding its progress and what was going on when it was still an allowable opinion in the 15th, 16th, 17th century, when even popes were coming out and saying, hey, stop calling one another heretic. It's not a dogma yet. You're allowed to believe it or you're allowed to deny it. But don't call anybody a heretic. It's an allowable opinion. Basically, and I told them, to make a long story short, any amount of popes can deny the Immaculate Conception if it's allowable opinion. Yeah. However, if it's a dogma, nobody can deny it.
Right.
I said, the first thing you've got to understand is what is a dogma and what is an allowable opinion? If something's an allowable opinion, any number of popes can hold whatever they want on either side, church fathers, anybody. Yeah. If it's an allowable opinion too, that means it's not even ordinary magisterian dogma. Mm-hmm. It's something that hasn't been defined yet by a pope. Popes can deny it. Popes can hold both sides on it, because no pope ever came out with the solemn magisterium declaration that, bango, this is what it is. And so, even, I said, for the sake of the argument, even if you do show me some popes that denied the Immaculate Conception, it doesn't mean anything. I can show you other people that taught it. So now we can pit church fathers and popes against one another till kingdom come on allowable opinions.
Yeah.
If it's not a dogma, it doesn't matter. They're not heretics. I says, but it only takes one pope to make it a dogma. And then, if a pope denies it, that's it, he's not the pope. And I said, it would have been a dogma if Pius IX was the pope. Because
yeah.
He did, it's worded, it was a good definition, where it worded, but there's a little bit of dishonesty what he was writing in there, which I can get into you guys a little later on that. But the definition itself is beautiful. So I said, if he was the pope, then it would have been defined, but he wasn't, so it's null and void. I said, up until that point, they're all admitting, even the theologians are going, some people believe it was a dogma on one side or the other, they had to be silenced. They had, don't call one another a heretic. I don't want to go here too long if I get too deep into it, but like for instance, in 60s to 4th, in the 17th century came out, or 15 even, or 16 something, 14, no 14, I forget the year, but 1400s. And he said, look, because they were already celebrating the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. The big problem was the Dominicans denied, and it's Aquinas wasn't a heretic for denying it, because it wasn't defined yet. So he believed in the Immaculate Birth, but not the Immaculate Conception. See, Immaculate Birth is Mary's born without sin, and that, I'm almost sure, that's ordinary magisterium dogma from what I'm looking at now. Even the popes that were not sure about the Immaculate Conception or sort of could be taken both ways, they all believed in the Immaculate Birth. Because the important thing to them was that when Jesus came into the womb of Mary and took on her flesh, she had to be pure. They all agreed with that. So when was she purified was the argument. In the womb, or was she never had? So if she's purified in the womb, then she had original sin. If she's purified at conception, not even purified, preserved, and she never had it. So you got the Immaculate Birth, which I think they all believed in, and then the Immaculate Conception, which is different. That's stating she never had it. Immaculate Birth says she had it in the womb, but God went into her womb and purified her in the womb of St. Anne. So that when she was born, she was then born free from sin. So that was the big debate. And it's still an allowable opinion down till today. You can believe whatever you want. Immaculate Birth, I don't think you could, but no pope even defined the Immaculate Birth. We declare and define and decree. So all the Pope's things that I'm reading, looking up right now, it's all sermons, letters. It's no fallible, there's no fallible teaching, even about the Immaculate Birth. We declare and define and decree that Mary was born immaculate. We declare that she was conceived immaculate. Infallible, yeah. There was no infallible decree. No solemn magisterial decree. But there was teachings on it, on both sides. And it's interesting that when I'm studying this now even a little deeper, and I know there's no ordinary magisterium on the Immaculate Conception because there's conflict. Some people didn't believe it. Others believed it. Others when you read it, it looks like, let's say that Gus, when he came out and he says, as regard the amount of Mary, I don't want to comment on her. I exempt her from John's statement, all men have sin. So he's saying, I exempt her from this out of respect for the Lord. And then there was another quote from Augustine, if it's true, now the source I can't back it up is in Glories of Mary from Apostle Alphonsus, where he says, and I quoted it in my book, Mary's Masterpiece, he said, there's no way that the devil would have ever had power over Mary at any time. Now, if I can get that source, then Augustine believed, he explicitly believed in the Immaculate Conception. If I don't get that source, he may have believed in it. Anyway, so what we're looking at is opinions. People are throwing them back and forth. So, hey, look at all these popes, what they said. So this pope, and they believe Pius IX is a pope, and look what he said. So those popes are heretics. Well, first of all, when something's an allowable opinion, anybody can hold any side of it. Only once it's defined, and one pope said, once we finally define something, it can never be brought up again for discussion, because it's done. But until then, what does an allowable opinion mean? It means you can hold both opinions. And until it's settled by a pope, no one could be called a heretic. So it's important. God showed me this, because I understand people can get confused by this. It has to do with papal infallibility. It has to do with dogmas and allowable opinions. So when he asked this question on Ascension Day, that's when he gave me the question on one of those telegram things through Facebook. And I was gonna put it off. I'll do it later. And then you get angry. And he's asking, like, he wants help. Like, how do you answer this, you know? So for the glory of Mary, you know, for glory of my opinion. And more important, not my opinion, yes, but for the papal infallibility, because this could condemn the whole papacy. If you don't look at this the right way, and you think everything the Pope teaches is infallible, and that so, or you don't know about allow opinions and dogmas, you can say, who's right, Pius IX, or these popes that didn't teach the Immaculate Conception? And by the way, I haven't, either popes he quoted, I don't see them actually denying it. They're teaching the Immaculate Birth, but the Immaculate Conception they're not sure about. But either, it doesn't matter. I say, for the sake of the argument, let's say Pope A, B, and C, real Pope, said Mary was not conceived in sin, but she was only born without sin. It's an allowable opinion. It's not a dogma. And you could bring up examples in history of the Church when they were actually debating things that weren't defined yet. And that only happens with, if something belonged to the Ordinary Magisterium, and you can prove that, and that's a little bit harder to prove because you got to go and look at all the Church Fathers, but it wasn't solemn, it's a little more difficult. Then if you can prove that, you can say we don't even need a solemn definition. But you still may need one if people are questioning, you didn't check all the Church Fathers, what did you think about he said? So solemn definitions are the most in-your-face kind of a thing. And so are ordinary magisterium dogmas too, but you got to study a little more for those. So my point is, once, especially when it's solemn, so the Immaculate Conception, and it's interesting because there were some Church Fathers and early saints that really believed in the Immaculate Conception, and there were some that were not sure about it, and I don't know, even though right now I'm going to look at the evidence I'm coming up with, there's anyone that actually really explicitly denied it. But even if there was, it doesn't matter. And what I came up with was, I started with the infallible definition in the 20th century by attempted infallible by Pius IX. And he said, at that point, like in the 1400s, then Trent even said, when was talking about original sin, Trent said, however, we don't mean to include the Blessed Mother in here until the Holy See makes a solemn definition. That's in Trent. That was a good statement. Yeah. So what they're saying in Trent, when they're talking about original sin, he's saying, we don't mean to include Mary until we get a solemn definition about her. So what they're telling you is we haven't decided it yet. I go into the whole argument about what's taking you so long.
Yeah.
That makes me angry. Yeah. Okay? And that's another issue. I don't want to do a lecture on this, but maybe a little bit. Where the popes, anti-popes were wrong was in the 17th century, because so many people were then now believing in the Immaculate Conception. A lot of people believed in it. They had a feast for it. He came out and said, the Holy See is now favoring the Immaculate Conception and we're suppressing the other opinion. It can only be held in private. Well, that's bullshit. I mean, you can't say that. That's a bad law. Why? I'm speaking to, I forget the Pope's name who put this out there. if you're not ready to define it yet, you can't silence an allowable opinion. You can't.
Yeah.
First, there was a there was a public silence. Well, that's what came out. Said you can't publicly teach it. I'm the guy. Let's say I'm the guy who's on the other side of it.
Yeah.
Why can I not publicly teach it? Is the Immaculate Conception a dogma? I wrote about this in one of my books already, but not regarding this. So the Pope says, no, it's not a dogma. So you're not ready to say it's absolutely true. No, not yet. Well, then you can't silence me. I'm sorry. It's an invalid law. You can't tell me to shut up. I got my right to deny the Immaculate Conception until you, Holy Father, are inspired by the Holy Spirit to tell me that it's that Immaculate Conception is a dogma. So that comes along in the 17th century. Which is really an unjust law, because you're silencing people to not hold them and allow an opinion.
Yes.
You can't do that.
No.
That's when they came up with these goofy censures, that it's near to heresy. It's close to heresy. Well, either it is or it isn't.
Yeah.
You're the Pope. You've been given the power to decide it.
Yeah.
Make the decision. And he wasn't ready to make the decision then. Mm-hmm. But he's silencing the opposition. Now, the opposition really doesn't stay silent, and they shouldn't. They don't have to.
Yeah.
That's a sinful papal law. And they were still having disputes. But when it came to Pius IX, there was a lot of people, because there were still disputes, even in spite of what he said, and they were allowed to dispute it, really. You can't tell somebody they can't publicly teach an allowable opinion. You're the Pope. You can solve it. If the Pope came out and said, we declare and define the Immaculate Conception as a dogma, now you're dead. Now you can't think it. You can't even believe it in your heart. Forget along about public teaching it. All I'm telling you is I'm proving to this person who wrote this article is a Protestant, and he's trying to attack the papacy and the Immaculate Conception. He's a double attack. I'm proving to him this has not been a dogma, and until it's a dogma, you can believe either side. The early church, when they arguing over certain things, that the Pope finally had to step in, bango, now you can't do it. And so the whole crux of the matter comes down to allowable opinions and dogmas. Those are two different creatures. A pope and a church father and a critique can hold any position they want, even though they would be in error. One of them's obviously going to be in error. It's a non-heretical error. It's not a sin. It's allowable. It's A-OK. You see, more than even defending the Immaculate Conception, which I love to do, is I'm defending the papacy, because this gets right at the heart of papal infallibility.
Right.
These bastards will use this to destroy the whole Roman Catholic Church and the whole papacy.
Yeah.
By taking things out of context, by look what this Pope said, look what he said. Yeah, he said it, but was it a dogma back then?
Yeah.
All right? And look, this Pope said different from that Pope. It reminded me, there's still a lot more stuff I got to do. I got my book on the Solomon Order Magisterium. I did briefs on it, and I got the truth. It's right there. But I got a whole book tracing the whole, that's where I talk about the thing on the Immaculate Conception. When I first was writing that book, I believed these guys were real popes. So I was talking about the progress of how an allowable opinion comes to be a dogma. And my whole argument was, what took these, especially these apostate anti-popes, since Aquinas and all that, what took them so long to really define it? Because you could have ended this real easy. You're letting people fight over this thing. See, the Dominicans denied it because of Aquinas, but it wasn't heretical. And the Franciscans held it. Dun Scotus is the one that came up. Long story short again. The big argument was, how could Mary be free from original sin and never have it, and at the same time need to be redeemed? And he came up with a beautiful definition: by the foreseen merits of Christ when he died on the cross, he went back to Mary when she was conceived and preserved her from falling into original sin. So the redemption, she needed it, but in her case, it preserved her from ever falling. The example I give is, we're all mankind is walking down the road and we fell into a pit of crap, and we all got defiled. And then God comes along, he cleans us up. Mary's walking down that road, and the redemption and prevents her from falling in it. The redemption prevented her, but she needed the redemption. Only she didn't fall in, we fell in. It's simple. But anyway, Dun Scotus came along, and he got the proper theology, and they were waiting for a proper theology before they can define it. I go over it. I said, before an allowable opinion could be a dogma, the Pope's always concerned that it has a theological explanation, so it doesn't deny other dogmas.
Yeah.
So somebody can come along and say, along, if she was free from original sin, then she didn't need to be redeemed. The redemption didn't do her nothing. And God's, all of us need to be redeemed and saved. She was saved by way of preservation. We were saved by way of pulling us out of the sin. It's a beautiful definition, really, even Pius IX, the way he gave it, the definition. But he was dishonest about some certain things he said. When you read, he pretends that all the church, they all held it. They didn't all, some of them, you can tell they probably held it, but they weren't clear about it. They were holding back. So anyway, I don't want to, I'm just telling you, this is what just started on Ascension Day. And I was ready to go with grace, free will, predestination, which is another biggie. And then I went from there and says, before I do that, let's do detractions because I can finish that quick. And then I went from detractions, even though I can do it quick, to this. And this one was like, when I read it, it's like, God lights you up, you know? Because God's time is perfect. Because here I'm defending not just the Mary and the Immaculate Conception, because you can hold whatever opinion you want, but I love defending it anyway. So that's big. But what I saw as the big danger is the papacy. Yeah. Yeah. This guy who wrote the article, this Protestant, is trying to attack the whole papacy. Okay. I wasn't going to tell you guys that today, but I did. I don't want to leave you hanging. But I should have it done by this week. Nice. When God opens your eyes, like I tell you guys, it's a, and I had a book a while ago on this about the church fathers on Mary. Uh-huh. Beautiful quotes. Beautiful. Oh, man, so beautiful. And they're all teaching. From what I'm gathering, this is something new that I'm trying to look at this from all sides. They all is teaching that there's no way that God would have came into the womb of Mary unless she was already purified. Because he wouldn't have come into Mary if she was had any kind of sin, defiled. So the only question then was, when was Mary purified? Right. So either in the womb or the instant she was conceived, which means she never had it at all. So that's the argument.
These Protestants are total idiots when they say it's...
Look. If you're, I think even, this is great, even Augustine went even further. I go further. And that's what he did too. Well, if it's true, that source. But what I said was, I'm going to go a step further. And this is some of the church fathers. Not only would God never come into the womb of Mary if she had any sin, he would never come into the womb of a woman who never had any sin at all, ever. He's not going to go into a woman who at one time had sin. Who at one time was under the dominion of the devil and then was purified. Because if you don't believe in the Immaculate Conception, but only the birth, then Mary was under the dominion of the devil. She was a son of the devil until she was purified in her womb. So, and a lot of church fathers are saying this, and I won't call, God's not even going to come into the womb of a mother, even if she's purified from all sin at that moment, who ever had any sin. Yeah. It's God going into there. Because then the devil can say, I had first possession of her. Yeah. You took her second. I had her first. Right. She was mine. Yeah. The devil can never say that about Mary. Yeah. If you only believe in the Immaculate Birth and not the Immaculate Conception, the devil can say, Mary was mine. Mm-hmm. I owned her once. Yeah. Until you purified her in the womb. You understand?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the church father, being a black conception, they say that. And the one quote, which I haven't been able to find in St. Augustine, he said, it's just odious to think that God would ever come into the womb of a tabernacle that was ever under the control of the enemy. Ever. It's a beautiful thing. I wrote about that anyway. That's in my book on Mary God's Masterpiece. So, and that's the argument for the Immaculate Conception.
You had to be... It's like the ark, right?
She's the ark.
You have to be purified in order to carry. They had carriers to carry the ark. Right?
Yes.
And then didn't those guys try to carry?
And he died.
They weren't.
And Mary is the ark.
They weren't purified.
Mary is the ark. And the Ten Commandments and the bread inside represent God and Mary's womb. And they quote those verses, but they could say, "Oh, the ark is holy, but it was made holy, but at one time it wasn't holy." But the ark itself was never under the control of the devil. I mean, they made it, and when they consecrated it, then it was under God's hand. But the devil wasn't taking control of the wood. Yeah. It was neutral. But, so people can argue. That's why, definitely, one good thing, like I just told you guys, which I did discover, because caused me to study it even deeper. I went, hey, you know, it's pretty interesting. Like, all these guys are teaching about the Immaculate Birth. Even Aquinas did teach that, because because they're understanding that God would never come into a mother who had any type of sin in her, original or any sin, because then he'd be coming into the enemy's home and taking on enemy flesh from her. And it's interesting, because I said, from my information, I believe that's an ordinary magisterium dogma, the Immaculate Birth. Unless somebody can show me something different. Immaculate Conception, that's another argument. And so you still can hold whichever opinion you want. But I firmly believe, and if I'm the next pope, I'll define it, and this time it'll be a real pope defining it,
yeah,
based upon what I just said there.
Yeah.
That just, no. And people are giving stupid, this is your Aquinas type arguments. Like, well, she was conceived, there was a moment in time when she was conceived and she couldn't, because if it happened when she was conceived and then it happened. I says, no, it's instantaneous. It's instantaneous. There's no time that passed with the conception. It was instantaneous. As soon as the conception took place, so did she was preserved. But it goes beyond that. This is great. It's beyond great. Because when I was talking about the miracle of Immaculate Conception, about how it happened, about St. Joachim and St. Anne, how God purified their seed. Because original sin, the venom, original sin comes from the flesh. It's handed down by carnal relations. The flesh, it's in the DNA. I call it the venom of original sin. And that's, so what happens, as soon as the soul is created in the body, at that instant, because this is interesting, at that instant, the venom that's in the flesh injects the soul and corrupts it. Now, but the soul was never pure though. See, that's another instantaneous thing. So God did not create a pure soul in the womb and then it was corrupted. The instant that soul was created in the womb, in its body prepared, that instant, the venom goes in there, original sin. This, so, with the Immaculate Conception, the real miracle took place between St. Joachim and St. Anne. The seed that was going to make Mary, or the egg that was going to be Mary, was purified. So the venom was gone. So now here's Mary's body, no venom of original sin, pure. Her soul's created in her body, there's nothing to inject in there. There's no original sin to inject. The instant her soul's created, no original sin, because there's no venom in original sin, because the miracle took place with either the seed and the egg of Anne, or both. And I go into that in my article. And really, that solves, that might be like the final, I mean, you don't need to say that, but I'm glad I was able to get that one out there. And I'm doing all this, I was just thinking about, like, the United States, that basilica they have over there.
Yeah.
The National Basilica. They dedicated to the Immaculate Conception. And they have a picture of the second coming of Jesus Christ over the altar. When I was going to Catholic University of America, that was right across from my dorm room. I used to look at it all at the giant plate. I say, it was kind of weird to me. I say, hey, they got the second coming, but it's pretty good. You know, kind of, because usually wimpy.
Yeah.
But now it's almost like God's saying the Immaculate Conception, the final nail, thing that needs to be defined, which I already did. I'm just about Anne and St. Anne and St. Joachim, the miracle that took place with their seeds in their eyes. It's exactly the way it happened. I have no doubt about that. Well, I'm not the Pope, so if I'm the Pope, it'll be defined. But the thing I never included was all the testimony of the church fathers, even the apostate anti-popes, the true popes, the theologians. What did they teach? When did they teach it? And I'm laying it out in the book, but I'm telling them beginning, look, as long as you've got people opposing this on either side, and it's not a dogma, it doesn't matter. You don't need to read the rest of this if you don't want. You can present a million papal teachings denying the Immaculate Conception if it's a fallible teaching. It has no weight. That's his opinion. It's part of the order. It's not even the ordinary magisterium. It's part of what could have been if he's an early pope. And the ordinary magisterium is the unanimous consensus of all the church fathers, and includes some of the early popes too, and the Bible. The Bible's ordinary magisterium also. So, well, I'm killing two birds with one stone over here, and the most important one is upholding papal infallibility.
Yeah.
Against these bastards, like, look what the Pope said over here. Look what he said over here. Yeah, it's not a dogma yet. It's a misunderstanding. And because these dopes, and the Vatican II, these nominal Catholics, they're so stupid, they don't know how to defend it. And they're going to get killed when we presented real popes condemning past popes and foul with Leo XIII and all that, about origin and all that. And this is so great, too, because people can say, like the Council of Fourth Lateran Council for the Divine Essence Heresy. And I say, well, how do you know this guy's not the Pope? Easy. Look at the desecrations. I don't have to. I'm going to show you the heresy in the Lateran Council. But they, I'm going to show you more importantly than that. Why? Another big piece of evidence. Why we know this bastard's an apostate anti-Pope. Because a true Pope can never make an infallible definition that's got an error in it. Never. And those are infallibly worded. It gets deep. It's so deep. It's wonderful. It's wonderfully deep. Because he's got these bastards in the trap. And unless you read what unless you go back and read what I posted, everything I taught, you're dead. Yeah. You're dead. Yeah. You're going to end up denying the whole papacy. You're going to go crazy. Maybe you lose the whole church. You're not going to be a Christian anymore. And you deserve it.
Yeah.
You deserve it. If you don't look at the fact that, I always said this, it's really great. Think about this. It is great that he's trapped these people. If one of these apostate popes came out and said, and they could because they're not real popes. If he's a real pope, he couldn't say this. We declare a defining decree that although Jesus Christ was a very good man and he meant well, we now discovered he was not the Messiah and the Savior. Good man, but he was deluded. We declare a defining decree. You must believe this under pain of anathema. A true pope can never say that.
Yeah.
Holy Spirit won't let him do it.
Kill him, Master.
The guy had to be an anti-pope when he said it.
Yeah.
Because a true pope can't. So, let's say a pope came out and said that a couple years ago, and you don't know he's an anti-pope yet, but here's how good God is. Before these heresies were Fourth Lateran Council, the two species heresies,
yeah,
and the Council of Florence, which would have been infallible. So you're looking at it and you're going, how could God allow the Pope to do that? He's not the Pope.
Yeah.
Well, okay, you're saying he said that and infallible, be it lost. No. If he was a true Pope, he couldn't even have said it.
Right.
Well, because it proved to me he wasn't a true Pope before the Florence. You see what I mean? Before he said it.
That's why the Catholic Church doesn't need any Catholics to be in it. It's God's word is always true.
Well, that's something different.
Yeah.
What I'm saying here is, let's go to the Council of Florence when he had the heresies about the two species. And that would have been infallible. It was infallibly worded. It would have been. If those were real popes, it would have been infallible. So I come out and say, here's Eugene IV, and he says that the soul of Christ is in the Holy Eucharist. It's a living Christ. And it's infallible, right? It's infallibly worded. So now if he's a true pope and the Holy Spirit protects a true pope from teaching heresy, how come the earlier popes said the opposite?
Yeah, that's right.
There's no more papal infallibility. The popes are wrong. The whole papacy goes out the window.
Exactly.
Here comes the other question. Well, okay, Richard, you're saying he worded it infallibly, but because he rejected the past pope, that made him not the pope, but I thought you told me he can never even say it if he was the pope. That's a good argument. So what do you say to the guy? And he will be right to say this to me. You have to prove to me that he was not a pope before that. Well, the definition itself tells you that. If you believe in papal infallibility and he said something contrary, I know he can't be the pope. The Holy Spirit won't let him do it. And I can easily show it to you. God has given to this on a platter. The desecrations. It's on a platter for everybody to see. He's the guy to put the filigree doors on with Jupiter and Ganymede. I don't even need that. I can just say, I know he can't be the Pope because he contradicted the past Pope. A true Pope can't say that. Well, prove to me he wasn't a Pope before he said that. Look at the desecrations.
Yeah.
Look what he put up on the door. He's an idolater.
And
because you don't condemn him as an idolater after you see what's on those doors, you deserve what you get. An infallibly worded council, believing him to be a true pope and throwing everything up into confusion. Because people are then going to come along and say, if he was a true pope and he said it's a living Christ and these true popes said infallibly he's the dead Christ, papal infallibility stinks.
Yeah.
There's no infallibility. There's no true church anymore. But God, you see the trap God got them in. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it because the only way you can get out of that trap is really honestly studying the faith altogether. And God is totally fair in what he does because you can say it's not something deep. The desecrations aren't something deep. The desecrations is a basic dogma. It's the first commandment. I'm the Lord thy God. Thou shalt have no strange gods before thee. I got Jupiter, Ganymede, Juno. I got, who's the guy with the two faces?
Yeah.
Yeah, Janus,
booties.
They're all booties, booties, naked booties. I got stuff all over the place. If you don't condemn that, I'm going to give you an infallibly worded counsel from someone who you believe is a pope and turn the whole thing upside down on you.
Good.
And then the process, everyone's going to be able to defeat you in debates and arguments because you keep referring to these bastards as popes when you have the most obvious evidence that they're not when you look at the desecrations.
Yeah.
I sit back and look how God put them in a web. He's got them tied up in a web because of their own bullshit, because they refuse basic dogma on idolatry.
Yeah.
He's allowed this to happen. The only way out is to read what I'm teaching. The only way out to preserve the church and everything is what I'm teaching. And it's all true and it's all there and it's all backed up. And the desecrations is a big thing too. It's big. It wasn't like God had the anti-pope Eugene IV come out on the Fourth Lateran Council and make that statement, but no one knew he was a secret non-pope. He wouldn't have done, because then it's really confused everybody. He did it in the face of all the desecrations that were surrounding him. So he's telling all these anti-cardinals and all these bishops, all these theologians, you want to believe he's the Pope? Fine. You've got these desecrations at that time in the 14th, they're all over the place. It only takes one of them to make you an idolater. You're an apostate. The immorality that was going on, you want to accept that? I'm going to give you an infallibly worded counsel that's not really infallible because he's an anti-Pope. You should know he's an anti-Pope. You're going to believe he's a Pope because you're denying the evidence. Don't they deny the evidence even now when we present other stuff? They deny.
Yeah, that's just like the Vatican II. Do we carry anything the Vatican II popes say? Because,
yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right. That's why we just keep, who cares about Vatican?
Yeah.
They're anti-popes.
Yeah.
It's meaningless to me.
Yeah.
On top of the fact that you got to, and think about Vatican II.
Yeah.
What these popes were teaching in Vatican, they go, it's not infallible. It's not, well look, they taught stuff in Vatican II that was infallibly condemned by previous true popes.
Yeah.
Muslims worship the true God.
Yeah.
Jews are God, Christ denying Jews are God's chosen people and pleasing to God. Christ denying Jews are under a covenant with God. That's in the Second Vatican Council. It's not a matter of whether the council is infallibly ordered or not. It's a matter of that these popes, if they were true popes, denied a dogma, not an allowable opinion, a dogma that was condemned by all the past popes and the unanimous consensus of the church fathers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Forget arguing about whether it's that pope in his fallible capacity, that's how a real pope falls out even. We know these guys are never popes.
Yeah.
But a real pope falls out when, because a real pope, in his fallible capacity, he can never teach heresy. Mm-hmm. How does he fall out? Teaching in a sermon, a lecture, a fallible capacity. When he's not invoking his charisma of fallibility, he's declaring, defining, and decree, and when he's not doing that, he's teaching fallibly, that's how he falls out.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, the Protestants are going to come along and say, if John Paul II, John XXIII, Paul VI, and all these guys are real popes, and they're contradicting these other true popes that defined that Muslims don't worship the true God, Christ denying Jews are sons of the devil, they're contradicting one another, what does that do to papal infallibility? It's gone.
Yeah.
And basically, these anti-popes don't even believe it anymore. I don't think they would even dare try to invoke it anymore. They might, on the final definition we keep talking about.
Yeah.
You know, we think that Christ was a phony.
Yeah.
Oh, we're gonna invoke our charism finally.
Like
we declare and define the decree. You see all the traps that God put these bastards under? You're arguing about, what is, think about this. This is like the desecrations, only in writing. Second Vatican Council. Muslims worship the true God. Christ denying Jews are sons of God, pleasing to God, under covenant of God, when God calls them sons of the devil and antichrists. That's like desecrations.
Yeah.
Is that not in your face? But, anyway, I didn't plan on giving a lecture at all today. But again, I think it's good because I'm leading you guys into what I'm writing about. Tell Dermer too, don't post it up yet until I put the article on. First I want to get the article done, then we'll post this lecture up. Because, then we'll bring Hector in when I'm done with this. You're looking at, and I sit back and I say, you can't mess with God.
Yeah.
You know, the devil can put you on the web, and he does. The devil can twist you up too, and God allows it. He'll twist you back to the wall. You mess with God.
Yeah.
It's like he'll mess you up infinitely. He can put a web around you, and he's fair though. His web is fair. God doesn't need to deceive. He just needs to put the truth out. You're deceived about the Fourth Lateran Council and Eugene IV,
yeah,
because you didn't condemn him
for
the desecrations.
Right.
And then God's looking at you. How many people do we show the 9/11 evidence that the building was demoed?
I know.
And they go, Building 7 went down. No, the plane didn't hit it. Forget. We proved. But look, what about Building 7? And they still believe it? That's the world we're living. Like, you think God owes them anything?
It's like the song, they have fallen into the pit that they dug
themselves. They dug themselves. Yeah. He would dig the pit, shall fall into it. Psalm 27, so 25, 89, 56, 8. And the other one, the operation of error curse. Yeah. 2 Thessalonians 9-11. Antichrist coming is according to the working of Satan and all power and lying signs and wonders and seduction of iniquity to them that perish. Because they receive not the love of the truth. Therefore, God shall send in the operation of error to believe lying, because they would not believe the truth. Operation of error. It's not just that. It goes back to what I'm talking about with the Fourth Lateran Council. It goes back to these anti-popes who were teaching these heresies long ago when desecrations were hanging out in the churches and nobody was condemning. You want to talk about an operation of error?
Yeah.
You think these people that don't condemn the Vatican Council or these anti-popes who say Muslims worship the true God and Christ-denying Jews are pleasing to God, you think God owes them anything? He looks at them and goes, you're as bad as you can get. You were at the end road of a liar. You're as bad as you can get. I'm going to twist you like a pretzel. There'll be no peace for you. There's going to be confusion and chaos. So what do? They avoid the confusion and chaos. They don't think about it anymore. We're all equal. We're all going to heaven. Let's not go there. Let's not talk about dogmas anymore. Let's not talk about our differences anymore, because it's going to upset all of us. But in the meantime, they're sitting in there stupefied. Like, it's almost like they got lobotomies.
Yeah.
They lobotomized when it came to the faith. But I love it because, let's talk about the Diamond Brothers, right? Stupid shits that they are. A bunch of monkeys sitting up on a hill, aping to be the two witnesses.
Just Hector busting it up in a little.
Oh, he just did? Look, he's just busting them off. The Diamond Brother. Wow. As soon as Hector posts it up, I'm talking about him. Well, Hector, let's talk. Augustine in a couple of minutes, but let's talk about him. Let's talk about him. Another thing. He will get his ass eaten up in a debate with anybody who knows anything about what I'm exposing of these Renaissance anti-popes, desecrations, and it's not just desecrations is number one, but all the other heresies. So they go up to the Diamond Brothers, goes, oh yeah, okay. John the 23rd, Paul the 6th, John Paul II, all the Vatican II anti-popes, oh, they're anti-popes because they hold heresies, they're in the Vatican Council. Okay, Diamond Brothers, go back a little bit further. Well, maybe to like, no, go back. They don't even go beyond that, you know. Not to Pius, Leo 13. Let's go back to Eugene, all these things, Paul's, all the evidence that I have that shows what they were teaching. Totally contrary to the first 1,000 years of church, teachings of solemn magisterial dogmas that Pope had decreed and unanimous church and church fathers, and they won't condemn them. So if those guys are true popes, then the Vatican II guys are true popes, and you have no right to call them anti-popes. You have to be under them. But if they're not popes, then neither are these guys. If you don't go back any further, you're a liar, you're a bum, you're a hypocrite, and all you care about is human popularity, human fame, people praising you, patting you on the back, giving you 5 stars for your videos, telling you how great you are.
I want to know what the difference is from JP2 putting Pachamama on the altar or Eugene IV
put Jupiter on the door. Pachamama. Listen, Pachamama. Pachamama. What's her name? Was it
Pachamama?
I mean, I don't know. You tell me. What's the difference? You know, Pachamama or Jupiter on the door? You know, and Jupiter on the door was permanent. You know, they talk about Buddha on the top of the tabernacle. They took it down later. Jupiter's still on the door. You think I'm lying? Go over to the Vatican. You think those pictures in my desecration book, I made them up? Look, you could take an airplane flight over there and check it out for yourself. These are the Diamond Brothers. They're liars. They're sitting on a perch over there with this stoic type of mentality. His brother Peter with that chicken neck that I like to strangle with one hand and pop his head off. Maybe God will do it to him. He doesn't talk about the Jews at all. I mean, who are these guys working for? Look what I'm telling you about that right now. Are they worthy of being enlightened by God? God has got them under a deep veil, and they're never going to come out of it unless by miracle of grace, God turns back to them, gives them grace, and they admit they've been lying.
Yeah, you have to.
When people believe stuff like that, God doesn't owe them anything.
Yeah.
We've come out now and explained to people things right in their face. Where did Aquinas teach heresies? I show to people and I never get responses. 99.9% of the time when we show the evidence, when people ask us, we never get a reply. Nothing. Not even I don't believe it. Nothing. It's like deadly silence. What happens when somebody reads something and they do that? What he's telling you is, I can't refute it. If this is true, I'm in deep crap. What happens if you read it and you know it's wrong and you're convicted? You're going to just tell the guy you're wrong and I'm going to show you why. Here's where you're wrong. It's always silence. 9/11, you're not even allowed to talk about it. Holocaust, you can't even talk about it. When they had trials on the Holocaust, like David Irving said, you can't even use the word Holocaust. He wasn't even, when he was charged with denying the Holocaust, they couldn't even use the word. David Irving is charged from quote unquote denying this. I mean, it's because they don't want people to even think about it. I guess the only thing that can get you out of this deception is the Holy Catholic Church and the Holy Catholic faith. Our true faith. Our true faith. Our true faith. Brother Bruce came in this week and he said, what a wonderful thing it is to be in the true church. And, you know, I said, Bruce, you know how we know that we're right and the whole world's wrong? The faith.
Yeah.
The faith. That's all. I don't. God can give me a million signs and wonders. I ain't going to prove nothing. Nothing. It's not going to prove anything. It's the faith. Is what I've already taught true or not? Is this what the true Pope said about the real presence and the Holy Eucharist? Is this what the true Pope said about the divine essence? Is this what the true Pope said about Christ denying Jews? Being sons of the devil? Antichrist? Adversaries to God? Under a covenant with the devil? Is this what the true church teaches about idols on the first commandment? So they keep their mouths shut. And they don't say anything.
That denial of the Holocaust is like a MK Ultra on
steroids. It's MK Ultra on steroids. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Even Dermot said about the homo thing. That's getting to be like MK Ultra with a lot of people.
All of this stuff.
He said it's like a
MK
mild form of hypnosis.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's what MK
Ultra. It is MK Ultra.
It raises your mind.
Yeah.
Designed to like.
What happens is, you go to bed at night and the devil goes in there. He's going, homos are good. Homos are good. Homos are good. And you wake up and you go, homos are good. Homos are good. Why are they good? I don't know. Homos are good. Why? And so contrary to nature. And why does God allow that to happen to you? Because you're worthy of it. See, people can say, oh, I'm infinite. You're not invincible. For you to get to that point, you are bad.
Yeah.
For God to allow the devil to do that to you, you're bad. You deserve it. God doesn't do that to his people that are goodwill. He'll get them out of it. He could even get these people out of it, but they call it a miracle of grace. Right now, if God doesn't turn back to them with grace, they're dead. And even if he turns back to them with grace, they could be dead.
Yeah.
They don't have to cooperate with it.
Yeah.
God may give somebody the grace and start to listen to what we're saying a little bit, and then he falls again. Because he wants to go back out into the world. He wants to be seduced by what he's being taught. He's hanging out with unbelievers. He likes to discuss things with them. He likes to debate things with them. His intellect is getting stimulated. He knows conspiracies more than the other guy or something. That's why I tell your brother, be careful who you're keeping company with and who you're really in contact with when you're on the internet and chat sites. If you're a Catholic and you're not number one on the chat site with us, you got big problems. I'm not saying you always got to be on there, but with us. If you're on some other chat site where they're talking about conspiracies all the time, but they hate Jews, or they hate white people, or whatever it is, whatever site you're on, or they hate blacks and they think they're all evil, I mean, and you continue to talk with these people? They think Moses was a bastard? And the Old Testament stinks, and you're still talking with these people, you're cursed, and you're going to be blinded. And your obligation, if you are on a site like that, is to condemn these people.
Yeah, exactly.
Preach your faith, and you see how fast they'll kick you off.
Yeah.
Jeremiah 8:12, they are confounded because they have committed abomination. Yea, rather, they are not confounded with confusion, and they have not known how to blush. Therefore, they shall fall among them that fall. In the time of their visitation, they shall fall, saith the Lord.
Who sent that?
Jeremiah 8:12. I just looked it up.
Oh, that was you, did?
Yeah.
You just came up with that? Oh, look at that, brother. Hey, us Catholics, we got a lot of Bible verses hiding in us. That's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big one. You notice the other one, too? I like Daniel 3:40. There's no confusion to those who trust in God.
Mm-hmm.
I thank God for this deception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're worthy of it.
Yeah.
When something 9/11 is like that, the Holocaust, well, held it a little deeper unless you look at the evidence. But 9/11, and the guy sees the evidence, and he comes out and goes, the planes did it, you know, not the... He's the kind of guy that's worthy of having a so-called infallible Fourth Lateran Council with the so-called Pope, thinking he's the Pope, and believing, what am I going to do here? I mean, that's the way those people were with the desecration. It's the same thing. God's just. He's going to confound you. He's going to twist you. That's when somebody believes that, the people laugh. They say, if we show you the evidence and you still believe planes did, you can't be Catholic because you're an inveterate liar.
Yeah, exactly.
You're an obstinate liar. That's like a fact that cannot be denied. Once you look at the evidence, and you keep and you get away from me. We don't even talk to people like that about the faith.
Yeah.
But in all of this, we're probably going to have a lot more Protestants maybe converting than even nominal Catholics who have not stood up against these things. They're not good neither, but they're picking out a lot of these things that the nominal Catholics don't know what to say. And I know it. I've been there. If you're stupid, when a prop comes up, he'll kill you. He'll destroy you on papal infallibility. He'll tear you to pieces. He'll bring up some papal evidences, and you can say, duh, duh, duh. No, the Pope didn't say. He didn't say. I know he didn't say. We're just talking about papal idolatry is what it comes out to, too.
Yeah.
When you turn the Pope into an idol that he can never do no wrong.
Yeah.
And... you know, interesting too, because even after Pius IX defined the Immaculate Conception, which if you believed he was a pope, he did, that's an infallible definition. If he was a true pope, that's infallible. Even after that, they weren't believing it because of the authority of Aquinas. He was so famous, and they were taught that he never made a mistake, so they believed him even more than the putative infallible definition, and that's why the Immaculate Conception of Our Lady of Lourdes appeared, to confirm it even, another confirmation. So anyway... this just brought up another deep thing. And it has to do with my book on the Solemn Order of Magisterium, which I didn't post yet. So I'm incorporating a lot of this stuff in there, but not everything I'm saying. But anyway, God's timing's perfect. I got done with the prayer book. I got done with the Roman Martyrology. I'm getting ready to go on to the next big project, Grace, Free Will, and Predestination. I'm doing the retractions, which that's an easy one. And then God goes, back up. We're going to do another thing. Another thing, you see, and it's like when you read it, you just get lit up, you know, and you say, that guy could have wrote me anytime,
yeah,
sent me anytime, and when you read it, you're inspired, you get lit up, you know. I got to defend the papacy, this is big, it could throw the whole church into uproar. Deny papal infallibility, and not even so much for the Immaculate Conception. Although I love that too, and I got my thing out there. I'm sure, I'm positive, 100% positive. I'm not the Pope, but mostly also for papal infallibility, because I know what these bums do, these Protestants do. So here's a Protestant come along saying this, and if you don't understand the concept of papal infallibility, you're not going to know how to defend it. What are you going to say about all these people that say everything the Pope says is infallible, even in his fallible letters? They'll say that. Oh, when the Pope teaches in his fallible capacity through a letter or a sermon, it's the ordinary magisterium. No, it's not, you jackass. It's a fallible teaching. And they believe that, the papal auditors. Everything the Pope teaches, even when he's not invoking his charism and infallibility. You got to see all these things. That's why I wrote this book. Oh, he's not invoking the solemn magisterium. That's only when he comes out with the definition. But all his other teachings are also error-free, ordinary magisterium doctrines. I believed that at one time. In my book, I was whole. That's one of my retractions. I believe there is such a thing as error-free, ordinary magisterium doctrines that are not dogmas. And some guy corrected me. I forget his name. And he was right. And he caught me and he got me. And I admitted it. I couldn't explain it. I went, he's right. This is stupid. You know? It's stupid. And when you, I mean, that's a common thing. Oh, the papologists? If he's not speaking infallibly, all his other teachings and speakings are still error-free. They're ordinary magisterium. Some say they're dogmas even. So what's the point of a solemn magisterium teaching if all his teachings are infallible, even when he's not invoking the solemn magisterium? I mean, what's and I don't want to get it. I we can go
except
on forever.
When it comes to Vatican II, though, because they yeah. said, "Oh no, he, there was a pastor."
Yeah, exactly.
He wasn't, no. But
yeah, yeah.
They agreed.
It's exactly right.
Then they say, "No."
What do you say about that?
Exactly. Yeah.
Then they got to come up.
Oh wait a minute, it's a pastoral.
Then they got to come up with another thing. Exactly. Now what am I going to say? They papal infallibility, and I don't. I mean, we can be here a long time on this, but even when the Vatican I came out and defined papal infallibility was inadequate. Insufficient, a really crappy definition. Horrible. These guys are retards, okay? What do you expect when you got Jupiter up on Dor Venus? And, you know, what do you expect coming out of the guy, right? Scholasticism Summa. When the Pope is teaching out of the chair of Peter, he's infallible. You know what I originally thought? They got a chair in Rome. And he sits in that chair and it protects him from teaching any heresies. Which... Okay, maybe. No, it doesn't mean that. Okay, if it doesn't mean that, what does it mean? And nobody really came out with the right definition on it. They get all messed up on it. That's why I got it on my catechism lesson number one. It's right there. You got to see how many people are messed up on that. I'm just remembering everything I went through. It was hell. I went through hell on all of this. And I had to keep... Then finally, I came to the truth and went, wow, it's over. Because... If you're really caring about the truth, you're going to go through this maze. And it's going to, I had my head in the refrigerator a couple of times. Then finally, when you get the truth, you go, ah, how about the people that say there was no infallible definitions until the Immaculate Conception, the Assumption?
Yeah,
before that, there was no infallible papal definition. That's the other side of the argument.
Yeah.
Well, then how can you call somebody a heretic from Pentecost Day? Right after Pentecost Day, somebody came out and died in Christ, they were like an apostate. They're talking about heretics.
St. Paul's talking about heretics.
Exactly. How could you call somebody a heretic if there's no infallible definition that defines the guy as a heretic?
Yeah.
If I can't infallibly define what a heresy is, in short, how can I call someone a heretic? It's goofy. I never believed that one. Oh, man, I think I might have early on as a younger kid. Because I never thought about anything as a younger kid.
Exactly.
I mean, I just believed it. Like, yeah. When you start studying theology, you go, this is goofy. And this is crazy. A lot of people believe that.
Oh, yeah.
So you mean to tell me there's no dogmas before 1850, whenever the Immaculate Conception was made? There's only two dogmas?
Yeah.
Then that Martin Luther's not a heretic.
Yeah.
You can't call him a heretic because there was no dogmas then. It was an allowable opinion. All these things before then are allowable opinions.
Yeah.
Oh, it's true. You want to, you see the web? You know, we look at how crazy the world is on the natural plane and other things. Isn't theology even worse? These guys are like mental retards. They lost the use of reason. And they're like robots. What? These guys look at all the pedophilia, the clownness, and all the shit, and they remain silent. The pedophilia, they don't say nothing. You think this, they sit back and you look at them, they're like a bunch of big Pillsbury doughboy dopes. All the stuff that Hector's posting up on these stupid clown masses and all this stuff. What do you got?
OC chapter 4, verse 6. My people have been silent because they have no knowledge. Because thou shalt reject knowledge, I'll reject thee. That thou shalt do the office of priesthood to me, and thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I'll also forget thy children.
I will forget thy children.
Yeah.
I will forget all your generations of children. They're going to be preyed upon by priests, and they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even the children.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Could we break for the catechumen? Because Hector's going to have to leave pretty soon.
Who?
Hector.
Oh, okay, let's do it now. Okay. I'm done. Anyway. Amen, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. This is more important. Well, that was important too, but here we are. All right, Hector, are you ready?
Yep.
You should stop.